Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
At Boar's Head, we've been going back to school for over 115 years. And this year, every school lunch is reason to celebrate with the flavors your kids love and the exceptional quality you expect. Helping you make school lunch fresh, easy, and delicious. Ring the bell. The deli is open. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Podcast, episode 7, I think. I did it again. I still don't know. We actually said in the beginning of Real Dump this week, episode 7, and I had to cut it out because it was episode 5. Way off.
Dumb.
Yeah, I know, just real stupid. Ken Jack's got sirens blaring in the background.
Hell yeah.
Ken Jack's also still wearing the tank top, the sleeveless tee. Jeff's upgraded into a longer sleeve shirt with the chillier weather. I'm assuming it's like 60 something in New York City.
It's cold. It's like in the 40s.
I wore a t-shirt today.
No, you didn't.
I'm a cold guy.
Oh, dude. Speaking of colds, I'm still getting over something. What plagued me on the Real Dump still plaguing me this week. I feel awful.
First up, this was a late breaking story, at least in terms of me seeing it. Pikachu detective movie. Yes, the Pokemon. It's in development, and the actors that they want most to play Pikachu are as follows: Ryan Reynolds and The Rock.
What is it about Pikachu that screams detective? Like, what's like, why? Just generally, why?
We're probably missing some sort of Pikachu story we're not aware of.
Yeah. I'm feeling like they just want to create a Pikachu movie, and they're just thinking it's going to be a detective like spin on it. I think The Rock would be a good choice for this one. You know, just imagining the size difference between him and Pikachu would be pretty funny in and of itself.
Yeah, that'd be funny. And if it's not even like a CGI, it's just him painted yellow with like the whatever Pikachu coloring. No CGI involved.
He's wearing one of those big costumes with his face sticking out like out the front of it.
Like a Times Square actor or something. Or this should have been an Andy Serkis role. Why are they even considering The Rock? Just like Gollum as Pikachu.
The Rock's not going to play Pikachu.
Oh, right? Is that not the
The Rock's going to be like the, I thought it was going to be like the buddy cop. Like The Rock was going to be opposite Pikachu. I was just assuming Pikachu was going to be CGI. Did I miss it here? Is The Rock going to play Pikachu? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, I'm not blaming you. I'm just like, I can see that being a possibility now, and I'm just blown away.
I think that they would play the sidekick. Other names include Hugh Jackman and Mark Wahlberg, by the way. And it looks like Great Detective Pikachu was a popular game.
Oh, okay. So it's based off of... Okay, that makes more sense. Because I guess in Pokemon canon, Pikachu's already been a detective. So, okay. Now this whole thing makes sense. Whereas before, it was a bad idea. Now it's a good idea.
Why are they starting the spinoff before the original series, though?
Yeah, that's
already had animated ones. Are you just saying
a live-action regular Pokemon. I wouldn't mind that at all. I mean, yeah, it would be, you'd have to shred some dignity, I guess, to go see it. But I wouldn't mind that. And maybe they can have Jason Todd Frank. What was his name? The guy, the Green Ranger?
David Frank.
So Pikachu, detective movie with The Rock, Ryan Reynolds, Hugh Jackman, Mark Wahlberg. We're not sure if they're going to be playing Pikachu or the sidekick. But that's...
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? Next up, Han Solo, the Star Wars spinoff. Standalone movie has its title officially announced today, which is Tuesday. Solo, a Star Wars story, which I like. I'm glad they dropped the Han and just didn't call it Han Solo, a Star Wars story. Because when I hear Solo, I think of the really shitty CGI Jabba the Hutt in the special edition Star Wars that was yelling his name.
Solo.
Chewbacca Solo.
French now.
French the Hutt. Do we like it? Any thoughts? I mean, quickly, we're not going to stay on this too long, folks. Don't worry. Because there's literally nothing to talk about this movie anymore. There's no trailer, no images, nothing. I mean, they finally have a title.
I like it. I mean, I don't know what else you'd call it, honestly. It just made the most sense. It's just stupid how it took them so long to announce it, like it was going to be a thing. Maybe they were going back with like other titles, like Kessel Run, the movie.
Well, I'm curious if we get a trailer during Last Jedi or the week leading up, because this movie comes out in May.
They wrapped this week, right? I mean,
they still may delay it. I don't know any info on that, but I feel like they're going to have to delay it. It's so close, and there's nothing out.
Do you think Lord Miller are going to watch this?
No.
You don't think they
and I always thought directors like this did until I heard a podcast with Edgar Wright, and he talked about not ever going back and watching Ant-Man after he got pushed off that project or after he left.
That'd make you so mad. I wouldn't watch it.
Has it. To.
Yeah, no, I would absolutely. Never watch it. The acronym or abbreviation for like The Last Jedi is TLJ, Force Awakens TFA, Rogue One RO. So this one's just going to be S.
Dude, people are going to type out Solo, man. It's like when you're at work and you're like, you're typing it out, like abbreviating all the months. You're like APR, MAY, okay, the whole name. And then you get to June and July. And you're like, well, I'm going to just, there's just one more letter. I don't really need to abbreviate these guys. The only ones I really need to do are like, you know, September, October. And that has been Calendar Chat.
Calendar Chat, a very exciting series. I am excited, by the way, for the end of last week's episode of Flatline Steve.
Oh, no. Do we have that? Is that ready? I wasn't aware that was ready. I guess the guys in post are still working on that.
It might be ready. We'll see. Wait,
Do you just want me to kind of give away what happens?
No, no spoilers. No spoilers. Rumors have it. Production is going to drop it at some point during this pod.
Flatline Steve dies. It's very clear that the guy who he's paying left the room and he was flatlining and then he just dies.
How many people you think didn't even hear the Star Wars bit because they're like, ugh, it's over. That's it.
The best thing about that is when I edited it, I originally had a fade out on the heart monitor and it didn't take. So the heart monitor played throughout the whole Star Wars song. It was so loud. I had to turn the volume down. It was awful. So I apologize to the listeners for that one.
Let's get one more thing in here quick. Black Panther trailer just came out a few days ago. Any thoughts? Looked pretty badass.
Hell yeah. It looks great. People are kind of, they're kind of framing it in terms of this being like, is this the first Phase 3 movie of MCU? Or
this is the sixth Phase 3 movie. There's four after this. Infinity War, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Captain Marvel, and then the untitled Avengers film.
Are we already in Phase 3? Is Thor the first Phase 3?
Captain America Civil War was Phase 3.
Wait, so we're already in Phase 3? Dang.
Yeah, we've only seen four Phase 3 Marvel movies. The next one is Ragnarok, Thor, which comes out in a few weeks. And then Black Panther comes out in February.
Is there a Phase 4?
Phase 4, which they're not even calling it Phase 4 at this point. And actually, James Gunn, the Guardians of the Galaxy director, talked about it today. They called it post-Phase 3, and it has only Spider-Man Homecoming sequel and Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
You can't have more than three phases. Like, three is the perfect amount of phases. It's like trimester. Like, a trimester is essentially a phase. You can't have more than three of them. That's been Calendar Talk Part 2.
Part 2.
Oh, I'm on that cold medicine. I'm so out of it.
All right. After the end of this break, which will be a commercial or skit or something, I'm sure, something sponsored by a real company, we'll talk to Blade Runner because we saw it and the three of us really liked it. Also in this podcast, by the way, we're going to talk about our picks and your picks. We had a huge poll that we sent out today that tons of people replied to. The picks for best movie from every year dating back to 2007. So a little debate. But first, Blade Runner, after this break. Breaking news here at Trill Network News Headquarters, sponsored by Diet Pepsi.
Production costs have skyrocketed on the highly anticipated sequel Flatline Steve 2, resulting in much tension between Happy Madison Productions and director Colin Trevorrow. The tension has resulted in Adam Sandler, the head of Happy Madison, removing Trevorrow from the picture. This means Flatline Steve 2 has been delayed and will not air tonight during the podcast. We have obtained an exclusive statement on the situation from Flatline Steve 2 actor Jason David Frank, also known for his role as the Green Ranger.
I'm flatlining over here!
Wow, powerful stuff. We will break back for more coverage as we continue to watch this major news development. We will now return you to your regular programming.
Bazinga. 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 Bazinga.
We're back. Blade Runner 2049, the sequel. It's a long movie. That is for sure. Trill, you watched it very late at night.
I did. I went to the movie at the last possible showing. And it was long, but there was never a point during the movie where I wanted it to end. So long movie, great movie. I thought the first half was one of the better sci-fi premises I can remember seeing. And then I thought the back half kind of dragged a little bit. But I was really captivated by the first half more than anything. The back half was good, but yeah, overall good. I give it a 90. So very solid score, very solid follow-up to a very, very good sci-fi movie.
I gave it a 96. I think it was one of the more captivating overall movies I've seen this year. And something I think I said on the last podcast is it's very much like Dunkirk, where it draws you in with the AV, the visuals and the sound keeps you so in the zone. And a big problem we always have with movies that are too long is it's really hard for it to keep your attention because we're all dumb as shit and have really low attention spans. But this movie, at no point was I like, fuck, can this just end already? Can I just see the conclusion? The whole time, I'm just like, all right, well, I want to see more. I want to see a little bit further how this goes. I'd say it was about maybe 20 minutes too long, out roughly around. But other than that, it was really, really great. I don't think there was a single poor performance. I don't think any actor or actress did bad. I think everyone did stellar across the board, which is rare. And like I was saying, I think the last one too, even Harrison Ford did well in this, which I think is super surprising. Because you guys, this is a hot take for you guys, but I still don't think he was good in The Force Awakens. But
Jesus, so there's a lot of Ken Jack hot takes coming tonight. Yeah. Folks. Just rev up the hot take engine.
I didn't really like Harrison Ford in this one. I thought his presence kind of detracted from the overall movie. Although his presence was necessary to wrap up that particular storyline, so they couldn't have included it without him. I think I would have liked a Blade Runner story in the same universe that didn't involve his character and kind of left him out, because I just found that to be, like I said, more distracting than anything. And I'm sure the majority of people will disagree. Sorry, whenever I see Harrison Ford on camera these days, like, I love Harrison Ford, but even in his heyday, he always looked like he didn't really want to be there. But now he really, really looks like he doesn't want to be there. And he doesn't want to be there. I don't blame him. Nobody wants to be at work. So I get that. But you're an actor, man. Come on.
So we'll talk more about characters in the spoiler section, because I think we have to wait to talk really in depth about them. I gave it a 95. Third best movie of the year for me. And I have some reshuffling in my rankings we'll talk about in the later part of this podcast. But for me, I think the runtime is the biggest thing that detracted anything for me. But the more I am away from the movie, and I only saw the movie about 24 hours ago, the more I'm away from it and it sits with me, the less the runtime matters to me. And again, we'll get more into it in spoilers, because there's nothing huge that I would cut out. I don't think I would cut any scene out. I think I would just trim some scenes down. That's really it for me. And once you get above a 90 for me, you're an excellent movie. You just are now slotted between a 90 and 100 based on history. Like, I'm not going to rate many movies 100. That's for The Godfather, Empire Strikes Back. Like, 95, that is an all-timer for me. This is a movie that I loved. Amazing sci-fi. Captivating. I think that's the key. Look, it's 2 hours and, I think, 30-something minutes? 40-something minutes? Regardless, it's one of the longest movies in the last 2 years. but it keeps you going the whole time. I didn't find one part of the movie where I was not engaged at all.
You know, I agree with you. There was a lot of exposition in this movie and there's a lot of talking, but I like that because after all, Blade Runner, the first one, is probably the most famous for the tears in the rain soliloquy, which is like one of the more famous like sci-fi scenes ever delivered. And that's all talking and cinematography. So I loved all of it. But like you're saying, I think there was just some things that could be cut down. I'm not sure what. However, I will counter my own point is it did such a good job of world building with its cinematography that all the sweeping shots you get and all the setups of like, especially the outside shots of the city, like I wouldn't want to take those away because it was just beautiful.
That would be my biggest problem if I was to try and quote unquote fix the movie, is that there's no scene where I'm like, oh, there is no need for that. We could have done without that. There's every single scene. I think I'm like, I wouldn't want to go this movie without it. It's not like Transformers where I'm like, you could cut out 99.9% of this movie and it would be like, I don't know, 5 points higher on our rating scale.
Ha, good segue, Ken Jack. Transformers. Let's talk about something that doesn't require spoilers.
Do we have to talk about Transformers again? Oh, no. Come on.
I predict this is the last time we talk about it this year. So a good way to compare this movie to other movies in terms of box office success is Transformers. Because no matter good or bad those movies are, they make a shitload of money. And Transformers domestically made $130 million. It's a good amount of money. Blade Runner 2049, after 16 days, so that includes yesterday, all the way, which is Monday the 16th, all the way back to its release day. In 16 days, Blade Runner 2049 has made $62 million. Again, that's a lot of money. Great. Transformers The Last Knight, 16 days in, made $112 million. Two times the amount that Blade Runner's made, basically.
I feel like they did a really good job of advertising the movie. I felt like I saw a lot of good press.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Gosling hosted SNL. You saw him and Harrison Ford together promoting the movie. So I think marketing did its job. I think it was just a bad release date. I mean, this is a 2 hour and what, 40 minute movie that would be better when you had the time at Thanksgiving break to go see it or something like that.
Or summer, or
something like that. But like right now, you know, you're in the most beautiful time of year, late September, early October, mid October. I guess it's later October now. People are outside. It's 60 degrees. They're wearing their Patagonia Fresh Chinchilla jackets. They're watching football. They're doing other things. And maybe people just don't want to go to a movie, and especially Blade Runner, which is a really heavy sci-fi movie right now.
Yeah, I think part of it maybe is that no one's going to take their kids to see Blade Runner because they know it's instinctively pretty dark compared to Transformers, which is just like a CGI fuckfest. There was nothing really to contend with Transformers in that realm, where it's like there was nothing between Emoji Movie and Transformers. So I think it hit a good age gap where it's like everybody who has a kid from like, I don't know, 8 to whatever, 15, they can take their kid to see that. They can't take their kid to see Blade Runner. And it's just like you were saying, Trill, an awkward release timing, I guess. But I think it should be doing so much better. I mean, the reviews are amazing. There's not really a lot
great
of
great reviews.
Yeah, great reviews. And there's not a lot of contention as far as other movies out right now. And there's a ton of star power. Older people like Harrison Ford, millennials like Ryan Gosling. What the fuck is not to like? I don't understand.
I do want to declare something. This is going to be a bit of a Ryan Gosling love fest as we wrap up. No spoilers.
I'm taking off my pants now.
I want to apologize first off to Michael Fassbender. You've had a good run, man. You're still amazing. You're my number two. Congratulations on your wedding to you and Alicia Vikander. That's great. You're the best acting couple in the game, hands down. But I'm declaring right now that Ryan Gosling is the best actor in the world. Call me crazy, but Ryan Gosling has nailed everything he's done recently. And not just like nailed in the sense that, oh, that was good. I didn't hate him in that movie. Amazing. La La Land. Watched it the other night again for the 3,000th time. The Nice Guys. Great. This movie. Amazing. Blade Runner. His comedic delivery is one of the best in the game, by the way. There he has maybe one funny line in all of Blade Runner where there's a little bit of sense of humor, crushes it. I think he's the best actor in Hollywood right now.
I can't get into this too much, but I will try. So there's a scene in the movie where they essentially test the replicants to see if they're still, would you say, like a loyal replicant of sorts. It's like a stress test, and they sit in this white chamber and they just repeat words back to a computer, essentially. Ryan Gosling wrote 8 minutes of that type of test and performed it, like a whole 8 minute. Like he wrote that scene and then they ended up using it in the movie. So not only is he a great actor, I mean, I think he might have some great writing abilities too. And I wouldn't say he's necessarily the best actor. I think Daniel Day-Lewis probably still is, just because.
keep in mind, he's retired.
Yes, that's true. I don't believe that, though. I think it's like when, like, you know, Triple H retires and then comes back at SummerSlam. I think Daniel Day will be back, like, when it behooves him. I think that Ryan Gosling probably is, like, the hottest lead actor right now. And he did a great job in this movie, because one of the things he has to contend with, and I'll go into a rant like here, is he's too good looking. It pisses me off. It really makes me mad how I can look like this, like a dumpy five, and he's just like so straight up attractive, just perfect features. I was just looking at his body in the movie yesterday, and his shoulders slope perfectly. He's got perfect delts. Like, his clothes fit him really well. He's in shape. He's got a great jawline. And I look like somebody in the before ad for like plastic surgery or rhinoplasty. It just makes me angry how there's such a huge differential in like how he looks and how I look. And the one thing he has to contend with is, I thought for a role like this, the question always comes up, is he too attractive to play the role? But he played the role of a robot really well. So, big Gosling guy.
I'd say he's the, as far as the handsome to acting ratio goes, he's definitely number one. I don't know if I could put him number one at overall acting ability. In this role, I don't think required too much like stress as far as that goes. It's like saying Brent Spiner was like a really good actor for playing Data in Star Trek. Like, he's essentially a robot, so it's kind of hard to like gauge how good he was doing when you just have, your whole goal is to not show emotion. So I think he was really good, but also there's a caveat to it. So I can't say he's number one overall, but I would kiss him.
So I'll disagree with you. I'll disagree. I think playing a robot is really difficult. I think not showing emotion probably is difficult for an actor, because there's so many nuances and ticks that you cannot do. And then especially in scenes where you have to show a little bit of humanity. So maybe that's not the case. Maybe playing a robot's super easy. That's just my opinion for someone who has never acted before or had worked on movies.
What about Schwarzenegger, Terminator? Would you say that was a great performance?
Yeah, I think he did what he had to do there, man. I think he was an efficient, you know, they put him in a pinch hit situation and he did what he had to do. But that was a different kind of robot, Ken Jack. Now let me come up with an argument on the fly. That was a T-800, and it's very different from a replicant who is obviously, as you can see from the movie where he is drinking and eating, is more advanced than a simple T-800. So yeah, there had to be a little more nuance in Gosling's performance.
I would say Robert Patrick as the T-1000 in Terminator 2 did a far better job than Schwarzenegger ever did as a T-100.
See, I would agree with you, but I think that stoicness and that lack of emotion is really what sold the role for Robert Patrick.
What about a Blade Runner or Terminator crossover?
Okay, so you stupid idiot, you cannot do a Terminator Blade Runner crossover, because in Terminator canon, the world is run by the Skynet during the events of Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. So you'd have to retcon it. Are you willing to retcon Terminator after all the good movies that have happened in that universe?
The second you involve time travel, there's alternate dimensions. So there can be a dimension that devolves into Blade Runner and a dimension that devolves into Skynet run like shithole. Didn't think about that, did you, bitch?
You got me there. I guess I'm trying to wrap my head around like Harrison Ford trying to like play off of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Okay, Robin Wright in this movie. What'd you guys think?
Really good.
I only have an issue with one actor in this movie.
Interesting. Ooh, I'm curious who it is.
Who is it?
Got a guess?
Leto?
Actor, yeah. Or actress? Oh, interesting.
Leto.
Did he go
full bad?
Did he go full Leto? Is that your problem? He went full Leto on it.
He was too Leto for me. And I hate that because I do like Jared Leto. I think his acting is amazing, and the way he dives into characters is great. But just something about the way he went about that character, it kind of set me off, and I was looking too much at Jared Leto.
I just like to see him in a kid's movie. Just get him on an episode of Sesame Street or something.
Oh, God.
Imagine him character acting for Sesame Street. He's just like cosplaying as Big Bird, like shitting on cars.
He's like yelling at the director, tell me why the bird is big. What's the reason?
Let's move to spoilers. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a breather here. We just tweeted out that Ken, Jack, and Trill got in a big argument. It got ugly here. We'll talk spoilers.
Are you tired of being lonely? Having trouble with relationships? Well, boy, do we have the thing for you. The Amazon Echo Thought provides all the organization of our last generation of e-home devices, but this time, you have a sexy hologram doing it for you.
Oh, Alexa, do you think I'm sexy?
Now ordering 300 rolls of brawny paper towels.
Oh, Alex, do, I make you Randy?
Now posting all iCloud photos to Facebook.
The best part is, we have holograms for any inclination.
So, grandson, what would you like for dinner?
Open the blast doors! Open the blast doors!
And the cherry on top, you can transfer its cloud data to a collapsible vape pen.
Bro, pass me some of that Lush vape pen, man!
Hey, lay off, that's my girl, bro.
You fucking what, bruv?
The Amazon Echo Thought. Now available in a Spencer's gift store near you.
All right, time to get really into this one, because there are a lot of spoilers. So warning right now, if you have not seen Blade Runner and you don't want this spoiled for you, stop. Pause it, look on the iTunes or SoundCloud or wherever you're listening on. Look on the description and you can see where to jump to hit our next segment. We don't want to spoil it for you because we can really ruin the movie here. It's a very spoiler-heavy movie. So quickly recapping, just in case you didn't see it but also want it spoiled, which is, you know what, hey, I respect the dedication there. It starts out with Ryan Gosling's character. He's a replicant. They tell you pretty early on without any mystery. They tell you that he's a cop. He goes, meets up with Dave Bautista's character. He finds these bones that end up being Rachel from the first Blade Runner. Research is done and they find out she's pregnant. She had a kid. The kid is somewhere. Ryan Gosling at some point does some digging and tries to figure it out. Thinks it's him for a while. Thinks that he's the kid because there's a boy and a girl. Does more digging. Meets this one girl who creates dreams and creates memories for replicants. He meets up with Harrison Ford. Eventually finds out that he isn't the actual kid. They fight a bit. They take down Wallace's henchman, the Jared Leto character who kind of runs the world, really, and creates the replicants. They take her down. And then in the end, Harrison Ford and Ryan Gosling's character, they go to the place where the child is at, which is Harrison Ford's character's daughter. And that's kind of how the movie ends. One of the bigger spoilers, Harrison Ford. He's only in this movie for 1 hour. I was surprised by that pretty big time.
13% of this movie. So
it's more than Channing Tatum.
It's exactly. He is in the movie more than Channing Tatum's in Kingsman. But he's also marketed just as much as Channing Tatum, too. I mean, he was on the full damn press junket. He was in that original trailer. I mean, the first trailer for the movie, Ryan Gosling is walking through that post-apocalyptic Vegas, and you see Harrison Ford. Two ends of this. Let's teen it up for you guys here. On one end, I'd rather have not known he was in it. I would have assumed, obviously, he was going to show up, but that would have made the surprise better. I think the only thing that might have taken away from the character for me was that I was waiting for him. I kept thinking he was going to come out at some point and they were going to go to that Vegas scene. But on the other end, there's no way they market this movie without him. They had to show he was in this thing.
I thought, because I didn't really know anything about the movie, I stayed away from a lot of the stuff. I thought when he went to go see Leto's character, that Harrison Ford was going to be the head of that company. I thought that was going to be the big reveal.
Yeah, that's actually a good theory.
So when he did pop out, like, I was well beyond expecting it. And you kind of knew he was coming at that moment. Well, because you knew what, you know, Gosling's character was, or I should say their name's Kay, is going to do. My big thing for Harrison Ford in this one is I feel like, so with Rachel and, you know, having her from the first movie carrying over Harrison Ford's plot to this movie and then involving Kay in it in some way. I feel like it was a good way to link the two movies together. But for this specific world, I don't know if it was necessary. I think it was necessary for the story, but I would have liked to seen more, something else within the Blade Runner universe. And I didn't particularly like the whole concept behind a replicant birthing a child, even though I think that was essential for the plot too. I'm just telling you what I did and didn't like out of this. So when Harrison Ford showed up and like ended up being the child's father, and you know, the child was revealed to be the memory doctor. I thought while cool, it kind of seemed somewhat like contrived.
I was going to say, I think it's important that they did show Harrison Ford as part of the marketing plan for this movie, because I'm just trying to think of trying to convince, like, my dad loved Blade Runner. So like if I think trying to convince my dad to watch Blade Runner 2049 because Ryan Gosling's in it, there's a 0% chance that ever happens. Yep.
No, that's kind of the other end I was getting at.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because this movie would have done 40 million if the movies weren't connected. I mean, you already have a built-in fan base and you don't want to alienate it. So I understand it, and I did love it. Don't get me wrong. I think my next thing is it kind of set up for a sequel. First off, Leto's character, nothing happens to him, right? He just kind of slinks
off. No, he's, which is kind of odd, right? Did I miss something in that?
No, I don't. I think he just kind of slinks off. Like, he's just like, see ya, and he's gone. So, he doesn't get it. I mean, there's no comeuppance for him, which says to me that would potentially happen in another movie, even though this one not doing as well as they probably would like it to be, might kind of put the kibosh on that. And then Gosling's character is grievously wounded, but we don't know if he actually passes or not. That's kind of left up in the air. It did wrap up the story nicely, and I know this is hypocritical because I just said like this storyline wasn't critical, but for this story it was. That particular one wrapped up nicely with Harrison Ford reuniting with his daughter. There's still a lot of open-ended questions within this world still as to, you know, what Ryan Gosling's place is and Jared Leto's character Wallace and how that would be resolved.
I think they left it enough open-ended where if there is no sequel, like, you're okay with that.
Yes.
You can draw your own conclusions to an extent, which is kind of what they did for the first Blade Runner. You it's left open if Deckard's a replicant or not, Harrison Ford's character. And though the director's cut, I know for hardcore Blade Runner fans, the director's cut of that, Ridley Scott kind of alludes to the fact and wants you to believe that he is a replicant, but they leave it open, and they definitely leave it open in this movie. There is no spoiler on that one. If you want to know if he's a replicant or not, they do not solve that for Deckard, which I love. I hope they never answer that question. It adds to the character for me.
That just reminded me when you brought up the first one too. One of my bigger gripes in this movie is that they started off with telling you the Tyrell Corporation, which is the evil company from the first one. They're like, the Tyrell Corporation has failed. The company that made the replicants and tried to hunt them down and everything, they're dead. Enter the Wallace Corporation, which is essentially the same exact thing, and now they're their new antagonist. Like, they didn't try and change it. You're the main antagonist at all. I thought maybe it would be the government or something, but it's essentially the same exact thing, which is just an evil corporation creating replicants.
So you're right. Like, you know, it's one corporation being replaced by another. Another thing, and again, when I nitpick here, keep in mind, I gave this movie a 90. So it's a great movie. This probably has to do with, I will say two things. One, Wallace's motivation for, you know, finding the child is kind of weak. He essentially wants to create an army of, for lack of a better term, like slave labor robots, because he thinks every great society, was created due to that. So there's not much motivation behind his character other than simply wanting to do that, which is maybe all we need in this movie. That's fine. So Joy is one of the more interesting parts of the movie. She is a creation of the Wallace Company. And she's a companion for Gosling's Kay. And I actually think of this as a sequel to Lars and the Real Girl, where Gosling has a real doll of sorts. But she does provide some of the more thought-provoking moments of the movie in terms of like the definition of humanity and what makes somebody real. And there's a lot of dialogue about soul and whatnot. So I really did like that part of the movie. It was I wouldn't say it was a major. I mean, she was with him a lot, so maybe it was a major thing, but that was something I really, really enjoyed.
She was good, and this is where I'll kind of get into parts that could have been trimmed down. And if I rewatched again, watch me not find a way to trim it down, because what the hell do I know? I didn't make the movie. But I did feel like there's a couple things with her that could have been shortened a bit. I think the sex scene was – it was interesting. I mean, it was definitely – it was something where she merges bodies with a prostitute who ends up being – kind of like an informant for replicants trying to take over Wallace and take over the world. I just thought if they could have snipped a few things with her, it would have been better off. And you do kind of reinforce the point, Trill. The whole idea of her was to really open up a discussion and have a thought-provoking character in terms of the importance of real life and fake life with the replicants. So that's, I mean, that's very fair of what she is. I compare her to Scarlett Johansson's character in Her. That's really what she was, like almost to a T.
Yeah, I agree. Especially that sex scene where in Her they found a surrogate and they didn't really go through with it in that one. But it reminded me a lot of that. The interesting part was, you know, the concept of a replicant like Kay, who he goes through the movie knowing he's a replicant, then thinking he's not a replicant. And I think did they leave that kind of open-ended too? I mean, I thought it was pretty clear he was a replicant, unlike Deckard.
They left it open enough just to think about it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like I said in my summary in the beginning here of spoilers, they tell you really quickly he's a replicant.
He had to be a replicant. There's no way he couldn't have been.
Because
he literally got like bullets in him and shit in the beginning. Yeah. Bautista literally power bombs him through a wall and he like gets up fine.
But I think they do leave it open a little bit because of the whole story of he is the diversion half of the boy and girl, and the girl being the child they're all going after. He's like the diversion half. So maybe there is something to his story. I hope he's alive because I do think they're going to solve more of his story. There has to be something there.
Well, I just thought the concept of an android needing companionship was just really interesting. It kind of drove at like the point of the movie. And I guess even going back to the source material is like, you know, what point do you define whether or not something is human or not? And there's a lot of sci-fi material like that out here these days. So, yeah, I mean, maybe cut Joy. I don't know. I really liked it. I wouldn't want to cut. I really liked when she was in that advertisement, like just the giant advertisement and kind of, I don't know if it was a hallucination or like an actual high-tech advertisement.
It was an advertisement.
Yeah. See, I thought that was really cool. I wish that would be real life, man. I wish the Marlboro Man would like come out of like holograms and like try to get me to smoke and stuff.
I don't think you can cut it. I think you're spot on, Trill. I don't think you can cut anything of her. I just think if there's one spot I could trim, it's probably in that area. And I tweeted about the runtime being long to a fault. But the more I say it again, the more I just feel like what I said was stupid because, again, I rated it a 95. It's fantastic. I don't think it needs to be cut, but I just feel like there's a few areas you could trim here and there. And I think she may have been – but Trill, you're kind of the prophet here. The more you talk about her importance of, you know, real life versus not real life, it makes more sense.
I think speaking of blurring the lines, I don't know if you guys would agree with me here. I think my favorite scene of the entire movie was when he goes to the memory maker lady. And she tells him that the memories are human, and he has like Gosling has like that first burst of actual human emotion. That scene I thought was like the most powerful in the movie.
That scene with the memory doctor was just really profound. You know, the special effects they used in that, like with the birthday cake and the birthday party creation and her kind of sculpting around that. That was really great. And, you know, like I said, I didn't really like how they had to tie it back to Harrison Ford, but the way they did do it was pretty cool. So, yeah, I thought it was about as good as it could have been.
Did we like the twist? Because for a lot of the movie, you are very convinced, and I was too, that Ryan Gosling was the child. They don't really tell you in an extravagant way. They just kind of lay it on him that it's a girl they're looking for, a woman, not a guy. So he is not the child. Were you stunned by the twist?
I wouldn't say I was stunned by it, but it was kind of a mind F to some extent because you were feeling along with Gosling and wondering what he was and kind of associating with that trauma. I think with that, like it made sense. But again, the big gripe was that it had to be Harrison Ford's daughter. It wasn't like a huge twist for me. It just was kind of like, oh, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I was overwhelmingly overwhelmed or anything or crazy surprised, but I thought it was a cool twist. It was interesting. You're thought provoking and all that.
And we can talk about some of the sci-fi tech and how awesome it was. I thought that was some of the best part of the entire movie. Not that it doesn't pull off from the original Blade Runner, because it does pull from the original Blade Runner in an amazing way. I thought the way it maintained an older movie's look but updated it in a way that was still fresh looking yet didn't like change the same vibe was amazing. I thought the whole like memory creation thing with the doctor and that little wheel she had where she twists it and creates the memories, that is some of the best sci-fi I've ever seen. The buildings were just amazing. I mean, everything looked amazing. All of the inside of Wallace's, Jared Leto's like corporation, which is the same building from Tyrell's corporation from the first one, but obviously a lot more extravagant with, you know, all the set pieces and CGI they can do now. Oh my God, it looked amazing. The look of this movie, even if you hate the movie in terms of story, characters, runtime, nobody can deny with a straight face that this movie was one of the most unbelievable looking movies they've seen in a long time.
And the person who in wardrobe who created Gosling's jacket needs a raise, because that's like the coolest freaking jacket in the world, man. I, of course, like if I wore it, I would look like the IKEA monkey. You guys remember that meme?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a good callback. But Gosling looks great wearing it. So
that duster looks so cool. It reminded me of if you've ever seen It's Always Sunny, when like Mac and Charlie get the duster and like they just want to wear it everywhere. That would be me. I would get that badass fur duster and just look like a total dumbass and get like my ass beat in a bar somewhere.
Yeah, but you look cool doing it.
Exactly.
Good. The music, before we kind of move on here for final thoughts, I thought the music was great. Hans Zimmer does it again. He's going to be nominated twice this year for Dunkirk and Blade Runner, because Dunkirk used little sounds and cues so perfectly. He did it again in Blade Runner. They have that big, like, I don't really want to make it. I'll play it over this. And make that noise. There you go.
No, I don't. I'm just making that up. It's the Inception.
That's close enough, though. Yeah. But there's enough. Well, yeah, I mean, he did Inception as well. The audio cues are so perfect. Again, the longer it's been since I've seen this movie, the more I love this damn thing.
I just thought the tech was really neat. I liked the projector that Joy was on, and then the little handheld projector, and then...
I don't have much else. I thought the emotional scenes were incredible. We already touched on that. Some of them were long. The whole scene where he stares at the horse after he pulls it out of the furnace when he thinks that he just figured out he's the child. Somebody said, I saw on Twitter, they're like, why was that so long? Oh, man, he killed it. Didn't say one word. Not one line of dialogue. We've talked about it a lot on these podcasts. Over-talking in a movie. Over-script writing. Not one line of dialogue. Killed it. The emotion and the tension of this movie.
Yeah. Perfect. And that's why, you know, part of the reason it's so long and you can't really complain about it is because the movie just gives itself air to breathe on a lot of these scenes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can't hate on the runtime. Although the folks I've talked to have seen it, you know, thought it was very long, but nobody's ever really said it's too long, because I think they realize you can't do this in 90 minutes.
No, you definitely could not. They would have to have been two different movies. So Trail gives it a 90. 95. Ken Jack gives it a 96, which is really good for Ken Jack.
No, it kind of means he likes it a little bit. He's like, it was all right. It's okay.
Good lazy day movie. Yeah.
You definitely had the most gripes out of the three of us. Out of the three of us, you had easily the most gripes, and you gave it the highest score, which is great.
It's a lot easier to talk about the negative stuff, right? Because it's easier to be a critic, right? That's what they say. That's what all the people say.
All the top men.
All the top people.
So Blade Runner, go see that damn movie. Good Lord. I may go see it again just to add some money onto the box office numbers.
Do you know what I think on this, though? I feel like this needs to be one of those movies that Netflix picks up right when it gets released on digital.
Yeah.
Because I think if they put it on Netflix and people saw it promoted there and that in their home, people have no problem going through the whole length of it. I think that's when that would get traction. I think that they could pick up enough interest to do a third movie off of that.
All right, Netflix, if you're listening, we'll team up.
Yeah.
Lights, Camera, Podcast, Movie Club. We'll team up.
Idea, copyright me.
So on the other side of this break here, get ready for some debates. Best movies from each year since 2007. You voted. We're going to read results and much more when we come back.
Hey, Jeff, what's going on, man?
Holy shit. Ken Jack? Where the hell have you been, man?
Well, we've been in this cave here for almost 10 years.
Ah, that makes sense and needs really no further explanation.
Yeah, exactly. So what have you missed in the world? Any big news?
Yeah, let's see here. Osama bin Laden was finally found and killed. Sad to say that Prince, Michael Jackson, Carrie Fisher, they all passed away. What else? The Cubs finally won the World Series. LeBron James left the Cavs, won some titles for the Heat, and then returned to Cleveland.
and won a title. What else? Oh, yeah, this guy, Barack Obama, became the first African-American to be elected president. And then recently, Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton to become president. So pretty wild stuff, I'd say.
I don't know. That's sort of interesting. What about movies? Any big ones come out?
Oh, yeah, here's this very convenient list of movies that have been released since only 2007.
Well, hold on. Let me see here. Oh, shit. They made 4 new Spider-Man movies?
Ah, man. Actually, 3 of the 4 were awful. They've actually rebooted Spider-Man twice since Spider-Man 3, which was horrible.
Oh, man, that's disappointing. Well, I'm sure there are others here. Oh, fuck, Batman vs. Superman? Hell yeah!
Ah, jeez. Most people actually hated that one. Ben Affleck, who is Batman now, was pretty good, but otherwise it's widely panned.
Oh, what the hell? Well, alright. Oh, shit, what about these X-Men movies? There are tons of them.
I mean, there are a few good ones, but otherwise, mostly shit again. And on top of that, Hugh Jackman retired as Wolverine.
Oh, what the fuck, man? Was anything good here? Oh, wait, well, look at all these Terminator movies and Pirates of the Caribbean movies. That's badass. You know, I'll be back, and Jack Sparrow, he was such a badass.
Gonna have to stop you there. Those movies all suck ass. They rebooted Terminator a few times, and they keep cranking out bad Pirates of the Caribbean movies. And before you ask, yes, Transformers, they came out, I think 4 or 5 of them, mostly dog shit.
Well, then what good movies have been released?
Well, you know what Facebook is?
No, not really.
Oh, well, it's this social networking website from, like, some nerd guy, and they made a movie out of it. Won an Oscar. Justin Timberlake's in it.
Huh?
Yeah, so, remember the 2002 Oakland Athletics?
Yeah, they won a lot of games in a row, but they didn't make it out of the first round of the postseason.
Okay, so Brad Pitt was in a movie about the team. Really popular. Another one that was up for some Oscars.
Oh.
Pixar movies are still great. This recent one actually just starred Dwayne The Rock Johnson, the wrestler.
All right, you're just fucking with us now.
No. And remember Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Well, there's a movie based off of that show, but set in India. It won Best Picture. Oh, and Matthew McConaughey won an Oscar.
Holy shit, I'm so confused.
Yeah. Well, they brought Star Wars back.
Oh, fuck yeah. Awesome.
Fucking nerd. And we are back. Huge segment right now. We've had a little debate here and there on this podcast, but one iTunes comment struck a chord with me. Said we've been agreeing too much, which is kind of not our fault. We've only reviewed good movies and really bad movies, so there's not much of a get being on the fence there. We're reviewing some in the coming weeks, like Happy Death Day, Geostorm. I don't know, maybe we could see some debate come out. But this one, we're going to get debate with.
Hell yeah.
We're picking the best movie of every year since 2007, the last 10 years. 2007. There's a lot of movies from this year that I enjoyed. We'll read off some real quickly. No Country for Old Men, There Will Be Blood, Ratatouille, Superbad, Juno, Hot Fuzz, Knocked Up, Zodiac, Into the Wild, Sweeney Todd, that got added into our list. Specifically, it says Sweeney Todd, and then in parentheses, this is Robbie Fox.
Sweeney Todd, the demon, Barbara Fleet Street. Sweeney Todd, gonna cut your hair and eat that pie meat. Sweeney Todd, who are you? You are Sweeney Todd. Yes, I am Sweeney Todd, and I am here to kill you. That was a song from the movie.
Andy Bernard performed Sweeney Todd in The Office.
Forgot about that.
Hot Rod, Gone Baby Gone.
Hot Rod's a great movie.
I love Hot Rod. Here's my question, though. 2007. What was your favorite movie?
I'll go. I'll tell you what it was. It's No Country for Old Men. That'll probably be the most popular answer, but I do think that was the best movie I saw that year. Javier Bardem is the man, and I think that's when he entered the collective consciousness of society. I know a lot of people think that movie is a little bit overhyped, and I can see how they would think that, but I do think that this is the Coen brothers' best work. I think that this is definitely the best performance from Javier Bardem, and overall, it's just a really enjoyable movie from start to finish. It's one of those movies where everybody's just a horrible character.
I had a really tough time deciding between No Country for Old Men, There Will Be Blood, and I Am Legend. Those are like my big three for that from that year, and it was really tough. It's a great way to start the podcast, but I'm also going to agree with Trill that No Country for Old Men is it was so fucking good. I can't not say it because every single character was just so great and three-dimensional and awesome, and it was such a great use of sound and plot and everything. It's like one of my favorite movies of like all time, probably top 10 easy.
We all agreed on No Country for Old Men here. I don't need to elaborate much more on it. I gave it a 97 out of 100. I'm going to cape for my own rankings and just read off a couple more. There Will Be Blood, I gave it 95 right after that. Superbad was my third favorite movie of that year at a 94. There Will Be Blood was amazing. I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis as Daniel Plainfield was unbelievable. The whole milkshake scene.
Oh, yeah.
My God, that's going to be a daily movie quote soon on our Twitter. That was just amazing. Twitter, or wherever everyone voted from. They voted. 39% picked Superbad as the best movie from 2007.
What the fuck, guys?
I don't have that much of an issue. I gave that movie high 90s, number three for me. Just behind it, though, was No Country for Old Men with 29% of the vote.
Superbad was like a generational movie, so that's fair.
Superbad is one of the best comedies released, period. So I understand that pick. Is it the best movie? It's a really strong year with There Will Be Blood and No Country for Old Men and some of the other ones in there. It's got to be. I don't know if a comedy movie's in any of my lists, so I'll just preface that there.
So I've been doing this now for 12 years, seeing every movie and ranking them all. Superbad is the highest comedy for me. 2008. This was maybe, in my opinion, the best year for movies. There were some real dynamite movies on this list. I'll read them off again quickly. Slumdog Millionaire, The Dark Knight, Frost Nixon, The Wrestler, Wall-E, Milk, Iron Man, Step Brothers, Benjamin Button, In Bruges, Pineapple Express, Wanted. I read that one by accident.
Gross.
I didn't mean to read that one.
X versus Sever.
Somebody put The Mummy, The Tomb of Dragon Emperor.
Hell yeah.
Regardless, the first bunch we read on that list, it's like not screening a caller. I didn't screen the answers. A lot of those movies are amazing. Trill, started out. What was your favorite movie from 2008?
Frost Nixon was my favorite movie from 2008.
Ooh.
Whoa. That, yeah.
Love it. Love that pick.
Frank Langella fan over here.
Dude, Frank Langella. So if memory serves me correct, he did the stage version of that.
He did.
Was adapted. But my God, like just an absolutely terrific performance all the way around. Martin Sheen, I believe. Was that the?
Yeah, Martin Sheen.
Yeah, Martin Sheen and Frank Langella just absolutely killed it. And it's a very claustrophobic movie, right? And I feel like those are hard to do. And they nailed it. I thought it was intriguing. I thought the performances were so great. They were just absolutely captivating. So yeah, very strong movie year, but Frost Nixon sealed the deal for me.
Actually, hold on. I said Martin Sheen. It's not Martin Sheen. It is, damn it, what's his name? Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen. Michael Sheen. We'll correct that. We don't need to edit that. I screwed up. I think Martin Sheen is somebody.
He's the president of the West Wing.
Charlie Sheen's dad.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And Emilio Estevez is dad, yeah.
Yeah. It's a fucking West Wing / Nixon crossover written by Aaron Sorkin. Starring ACVN. Will McAvoy
parody.
Sir, it's just sir, have you no decency,
sir? This I think is going to be super unpopular, but my favorite movie from 2008 would be In Bruges. I think that is one of the titans of film. I don't think any dark comedy has ever reached out to me and maybe want to see it more than In Bruges. It was like funny, dramatic, sad, happy. It hit every single part of the emotional spectrum. It was a great movie. So that's, I think, it's by a hair over Dark Knight for me.
So I don't have an issue with that at all. In Bruges is amazing.
Yeah, no issue.
It's a fantastic movie. I have one of my favorite movies of all time. And I guess I'm way off. This got very few votes. Huge Slumdog Millionaire fan.
Ooh.
Love the shit out of that movie. I can be backed up by the Academy Awards, won Best Picture. I loved Slumdog Millionaire. The music, amazing, by A.R. Rahman. Another Oscar winner.
I like Slumdog Millionaire. I know a lot of people put Slumdog Millionaire in that category with Crash as like overhyped popular movies that end up winning the Oscars. But unlike Crash, I did enjoy Slumdog Millionaire. I do think it's a bit overrated in terms of like winning the Oscar, because I don't think it was the best film of that year. But I, you know, if you liked a movie, you liked a movie, Jeff. So, you know,
I gave it a 98. It's very high for me.
That's a very high rating.
Whoa.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Big Dev Patel guy over here.
It weaves in and out of a very engaging story, well-paced. Danny Boyle did a great job. We don't need to argue about Slumdog Millionaire, because I understand why some people don't love it as much. I saw it very early on, and it's one of those movies that was limited release and then had a ton of hype. And then people went and saw it and expected the greatest thing of all time. And it isn't the greatest thing of all time. I did love it. Other ones on my list, Dark Knight, 96, best comic book movie of all time. And then Frost Nixon's in 96 for me. One of my favorite things from Frost Nixon is when Oliver Platt and Sam Rockwell are talking as Nixon enters the house for the first time.
You gonna shake his hand? Am I gonna shake it? Are you kidding me? After everything that prick's done in this country, I'm gonna shake his hand.
Gentlemen, may I present Bob Zelnick, my executive editor.
How do you do?
Pleasure, Mr. President.
And Jim Reston, one of my researchers.
Ah, pleasure to meet you, Mr. Reston.
Mr. President.
Excuse me, sir. Got a room for you right here.
Oh. Wow. That was devastating. Withering. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to get over that.
Yeah, fuck off.
That movie had so much charm to it. I thought it was great. Our listeners, though, they did not agree. All four of us were wrong here. Not wrong. All four of us were different here. The listeners strongly were in favor of The Dark Knight, 61%, followed by definitely maybe Step Brothers after that, another amazing comedy.
Oh, see, I wasn't big on Step Brothers.
That's for another time.
Oh.
Yeah. Slumdog Millionaire came in third with 24%, with 3% along with The Wrestler. Step Brothers, really?
Step Brothers is one of those movies that, like, if you watch the funny clips on YouTube, you get it all. I don't think it was, like...
fair, but there's a lot of them, though.
Well, I can think of, like, a couple, like the Catalina Wine Mixer and the Conte Partiro. Like, that was pretty funny. And then the rap they did on the boat was pretty funny. But other than that, like, there's very few scenes I come back to.
I think Adam Scott as Derek is maybe the funniest, like, side comedian character.
I completely understand. Oh, yeah. You know, you were busy fishing with Mark Cuban.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, not just the Cubes, but we had Chris Daughtry, Jeff Probst, Super Chef Bobby Flay. I mean, it was insane. I mean, it was almost too much.
My God, that's impressive.
Yeah, we were down in the southern part of the Gulf fishing Bonita. Robert, have you ever been down to the southern part of the Gulf on the Bonita Run?
Always wanted to. I hear it's amazing.
It is. It's gorgeous.
Are Bonita fish big?
What?
Dale, don't interrupt the man when he's telling a story.
No, it's fine, Robert.
I was asking about the story.
What's this guy's deal?
I don't know, son. It's okay. Well, Dale, they are what's called a trophy fish. So, yeah, they're pretty big. I'm sorry. anyway. God, I'm sorry. Now I forget where my story was going.
Ah, damn it, Dale.
No.
Robert.
What?
I asked him. Okay. No, he can join in, Robert. It's really okay.
Well, I asked him twice not to interrupt.
Listen, gang, don't be mad at Dale for ruining the story and possibly the evening. It's totally fine. I have a lot more stories.
Derek, that you do.
Yeah.
That you do.
Guilty as charged with the stories.
Oh, God, you're impressive.
It is kind of funny going back and watching a lot of things that Adam Scott was in before he, like, made it big. Like, I would say Parks and Rec is when he, like, really started, like, coming on the scene. So it's when those actors pop up and you're like, damn, that's before they got all that money.
All right, let's power through the next one. 2009. I'll read off the movies real quick here. Up, Inglourious Basterds, Up in the Air, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Hangover, District 9, The Hurt Locker, Avatar, A Serious Man, Zombieland, and that's about it. Somebody put Charlie St. Cloud for every single year, didn't they?
I'm happy because mine is not on that list, so I get to feel pumped.
Ooh, okay.
Okay.
We'll start it out then. 2009.
I loved Crazy Heart.
Ooh. Oh,
loved Crazy Heart. Now, it wasn't on that list, but I do think it was – I don't know if it was nominated for Best Picture, but Jeff Daniels definitely won. Wait, no, Jeff Bridges definitely. Jeff Daniels, yeah. They were repaying him for Dumb and Dumber. Jeff Bridges definitely won Best Actor, I'm pretty sure, on that one. We missed it, but the song, the title song for that movie, we missed it in our Best Movie Songs of All Time, but that's another really good one. I thought that movie just was very emotional. You felt really bad for the character who had been a piece of shit. it hit all the right notes. And I'm a country fan too. So like I liked it for that reason alone.
My go-to would usually be Inglourious Basterds, but the more I'm thinking about it, I think this is more of a fight for me between one movie that is certainly disliked, which is District 9. I think no one liked that movie at all, but I'm a
huge... No, people like that movie?
Everyone like it. It was nominated for Best Picture.
Wait, dude. No. Yeah, wait, no. I'm thinking of, I get Chappie.
You're thinking of Chappie. That's Chappie.
See, Chappie gets... See, Chappie
you got us. My brain. You got us. You just want to say Chappie.
Yeah, sort of. So I think that was my favorite movie of The Road, and if I had to put them head-to-head, I'd pick The Road, because The Road is so fucking... Such a great movie. Just yet another notch in Viggo Mortensen picking nothing but heaters. Such a good... dark, scary movie. I don't think anything post-apocalyptic wise, as far as on movie themes, has hit close to that for me.
I like this. I like we're going kind of off script here a little bit. I did not. I had picked when I read, and this is where we might get a little debate. I picked Up.
Boo.
Up was my favorite movie from 2009. It just beats out Inglourious Basterds at 96, and my few year obsession with Anna Kendrick started with Up in the Air, with a 95 and number 3. Up was amazing. And I'm sorry, but the haters and losers, which there are many, can just go the hell away with Up. Because it was much more than just that amazing opening. I'm sorry it was. It was a great, fun Pixar story with a heartfelt ending after an incredible opening in that movie. They nailed it with Up.
That was before Pixar.
Amazing imagery, too.
Yeah, that was before Pixar started going off the rails a little bit, I thought. So I don't disagree with it, but I don't think it was one of the best movies of that year. But I do think it's one of the better Pixar movies. And again, it resonated for a lot of people.
I think that was the last, like you guys were saying, it was like a pretty big gap for Pixar after that, kind of like the last heater they released.
Yeah, but you called it not good on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't think it's very good. Maybe it's just because I don't have like a crazy grandparent bond or anything like that. Like all mine are dead. So it was... I just didn't care about this old bitch and this Boy Scout and shit. I just didn't care. People hyped it up.
No,
like,
no.
I love kids' movies, and this one, like, I was just like, I don't give a fuck. Like, it hyped up as one of the better kids' movies of like a decade, and I'm just like,
so,
I don't care about this ARP asshole.
So here's what Pixar came up with after Up. So Toy Story 3 was the next summer, and that was good, but I don't think that was as good as Up. I actually think Toy Story 3 is a little overrated. Then Cars 2. Brave, Monsters University, and then they get to Inside Out. So, you know, maybe it wasn't a huge slide, but they, up until that point, pardon the pun, they had done Incredibles, Cars, Ratatouille, Wall-E, and then Up. So they were invincible. And the next one was Toy Story 3 and then Cars 2 and Brave. So, yeah, I don't know. Up's a good pick. Look, I'm not going to hate on it.
All right. Like, it's all fair. I think going after the old lady was a little harsh there, Ken Jack, but...
Also, Up in the Air, that got me to travel with slip-on shoes. Still do that to this day.
Few things have made me more focused at something outside of movies than Up in the Air did with me getting through the security line. I pride myself on getting through security quick because of Up in the Air and George Clooney's like 30-second rant about getting through security and picking the right line with Anna Kendrick's character. Love that.
Bingo. Asians.
You can't be serious.
Never get behind people traveling with infants. Never seen a stroller collapse in less than 20 minutes. Old people are worse. Their bodies are littered with hidden metal, and they never seem to appreciate how little time they have left on Earth. There you go. 5 words, randomly selected for additional screening. Asians. They pack light, travel efficiently, and they got a thing for slip-on shoes. God love them.
That's racist.
I'm like my mother. I stereotype. It's faster.
2009, what did our followers pick? Inglourious Basterds. Nothing wrong with that. Kind of crazy none of us picked that. I love that movie. One of my favorite Brad Pitt roles and one of my favorite, maybe my favorite, Quentin Tarantino movies. So shout out there. 47% picked that, followed by The Hangover.
Mm-hmm.
Not shocked on that being up there. It's a great movie. A lot of fun. First time I saw it, some of the hardest I've ever laughed in movie theater. Up was next, then The Hurt Locker. 2010, Social Network, Inception, Toy Story 3, The King's Speech, which won the Oscar, True Grit, The Fighter, Black Swan, 127 Hours, The Kids Are All Right, somebody put grown-ups, that's great, Blue Valentine, and let's see, any more jokes, The Town, Despicable Me, The Last Airbender, one of the worst movies of all time.
Winter's Bone was in there too.
Somebody put Winter's Bone. Somebody put just the one scene from Black Swan. Ooh, MacGruber. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Trill, what'd you pick? 2010.
I love The Fighter. I will say, I thought the King's Speech was great. Okay. Probably the most Oscar-ish movie of that entire bunch. So it's no surprise it won the Oscar. But The Fighter was just all around. The story itself was, you know, pretty straightforward, but the performances with Christian Bale and Melissa Leo, and Amy Adams, and then of course Mark Wahlberg also did a great job, were just so good in this movie. That's what really sold the movie for me. So yeah, I'm on Team Fighter here.
I think I had sort of a struggle between two Leo movies for this, in Shutter Island and Inception. I think Inception had a lot more hype. But I think that Shutter Island was the bigger mindfuck, if that makes sense. But I think in the end, it comes down to which movie I would want to rewatch, and that would be Inception. I could watch that almost any day of the week.
It is very rewatchable. It's one of the most creative movies of all time. And the way they use music in that movie.
Amazing.
The way the same song stretches out.
Bum, 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 yeah, bum, 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 bum.
So, Ken Jack, you're picking Inception?
Yes.
I'm picking...
Mark!
The Social Network.
What?
The Social Network.
I didn't like this.
I didn't like it at all. Neither did I.
I thought it was a gassy fart in your car. Trapped in the car with this pretentious gassy fart.
Oh, come on.
That's me with anything Jesse Eisenberg. That's my exact feeling every time I'm watching it. It's like, I don't want to see this goofy, nerdy fuck. I just want to shove him in a locker and tell him to shut up. And that goes triple for every single villain he plays, which I think is only Lex Luthor. He's Jesus. Like the he's pre-teller to me.
So, I mean, I'm a big David Fincher fan. Trent Reznor did the score. I thought the score was incredible. They made a movie about Facebook have tension. And those aren't actors that I don't typically always care for, and I liked all of them. Look, I'm an Aaron Sorkin guy. I'm going to like almost everything he does outside of The Newsroom. Huge West Wing fan. I thought the script was amazing. I don't know. I love The Social Network. I gave that movie a 96. It did tie with Toy Story, but I did give the nod to Social Network because I did love Toy Story 3.
More than Blade Runner?
Yes, Toy Story 3 was incredible.
No. I'm saying you graded Social Network higher than Blade Runner?
Correct.
Oh, my God.
And then 95 Inception. Inception was great as well.
The only thing I can remember about The Social Network is Justin Timberlake played the Napster guy.
He did.
And that Armie Hammer played the Winklevoss
twins.
And
here you go. Here's a little movie trivia here. Sean Parker, the Napster guy, hooks up with a girl in the beginning of the movie. Who is that actress? Very famous actress.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
Rashida Jones? Was it Rashida Jones' character? No.
Dakota Johnson from the 50 Shades movies.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't say Dakota Johnson's like very famous.
Yeah. Well, for the 50 Shades movies are absurdly popular. So that's true. Why I'm saying that.
I don't know if I know what she looks like. I like her. I know that Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith are cool. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So 2010, the winner from Twitter, Inception. I agree with Ken Jack.
Twitter seems to skew a little more towards the, I don't want to say nerdy, but I'm going to say nerdy, like nerdy type picks. And I appreciate that.
All in this one. All three of us were close because Inception won, Social Network was number two, Toy Story 3 was three, but The Fighter was number four.
The Fighter was great. David O. M. Russell. I don't know. David O.
Jason David Frank.
Tommy.
So 2011, we'll keep it going. This was a movie list that I was told by this guy at work that I work with, been around the block a little longer, seen a lot of movies, Greg. He said this was the year he thought was the worst out of all of them. Would you guys agree, 2011?
I'd say out of all the movies I picked, this is probably the least good movie. You have to wonder the writer's strike in 2007, 2008, like how backdated production is, because you have to wonder if that had an effect on this year specifically.
Some of the movies here, we'll list them off. Midnight in Paris, Moneyball, The Muppets, 50-50, The Artist. Did you just shake your head at The Muppets?
I just went...
The Muppets was an awesome movie.
T-Lizard.
Yeah. The Descendants, The Help, Hugo, Crazy Stupid Love, The Tree of Life, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Ghost Protocol, Mission Impossible, Captain America, but they spelled it Caption America. So like a...
It's just a guy who sits there and does closed captioning really quickly.
There's a lot of different movies on there. Bridesmaids was up there. Trill, what'd you pick? 2011.
I picked Moneyball. And what I meant by my earlier comment is that compared to some of my earlier picks, it's probably less of a prestige movie and more of a more mainstream type movie. I thought it was great. I thought great performances all around. Like Brad Pitt did a great job. Normally I have a hard time not Brad Pitt whenever Brad Pitt's in a role. Jonah Hill, like this was probably the first movie where he was in a role where you're like, oh my God.
He's nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah. You're like, he can do more than just, you know, be the, you know, Mater D and Forgetting Sarah Marshall and whatnot. So I picked Moneyball, but yeah, like a lot of the movies you mentioned were kind of weak. I mean, I had a tougher, I will say I haven't seen The Descendants though. And I hear that one's really, really great. So
I think this was a tougher decision because there was a lot of stinkers this year and a lot, it was very top heavy as far as what movies were good. And for me, it was Moneyball. And after Moneyball, probably Drive, which a lot of people hated Drive a lot. But I like Drive. Yeah, I think we're just outing ourselves as like the Ryan Gosling like.
That was one of the Gosling movies though that made you go, oh, okay,
yeah, okay, like,
this guy's got it.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting and thought provoking. But still, I'm going to pick Moneyball just because it was way more interesting. Plus, it stars my dad, Chris Pratt. Not really stars; he's sort of a really ancillary role, but he's in it, which counts for something.
So not to spoil the Twitter one, but I'm going to go ahead and say it's a clean sweep on Moneyball. All four of us picked Moneyball. Moneyball, I gave a 96. Midnight in Paris was next for me. I love Midnight in Paris. That is an awesome movie. Owen Wilson's great. The whole movie is just kind of just strikes up that bit of wonder and like imagination and why, you know, you like going to the cinema. For that, I had The Muppets.
Now, really?
I love The Muppets. That was a great movie. I'm a Muppets guy, so probably a lot of bias in there. But Moneyball was great, and also written by Aaron Sorkin. So again, that's you're going to kind of have me going for that because I do love Aaron Sorkin. I thought the visuals in that movie were great. Bennett Miller shot a great movie, and it was a stats movie that was fun.
I think that might be like my top three Brad Pitt roles overall.
So Moneyball, clean sweep for 2011. 2012, next up on this list. Argo, Zero Dark Thirty, Moonrise Kingdom, Django Unchained, Silver Linings Playbook, Lincoln, Looper, Skyfall, Life of Pi, Dark Knight Rises, The Avengers, The Master, The Gray, a lot of movies on here. 21 Jump Street, which is not in my top three, but 21 Jump Street, just a tick below Superbad for my favorite comedy in the last like 15 years. Trill, what'd you pick?
2012, I picked Moonrise Kingdom. Wes Anderson is good. I'm not like the biggest Wes Anderson fan, but this is the most Wes Anderson movie that Wes Anderson has ever done. So, I thought that like when you think of Wes Anderson, it's going to be Moonrise Kingdom, and the story itself was great, really heartwarming, really touching. So, I had to put it there.
All right. First of all, fuck Moonrise Kingdom.
Boo!
That movie's for nerds and creeps.
I am a nerd. I'm not that, I don't think, but...
So, fuck you for picking that when there are so many good movies to pick out of this year. So, upsetting.
Like what? Like, what's your pick? Give us your pick. I bet it sucks.
Pitch Perfect. 3.
Get the fuck out of here. Oh, okay.
Completely kidding.
Great movie, though. I'm surprised nobody actually put that. I love Pitch Perfect.
Oh, as for the best, it's a good movie, but it
people put some weird movies. People put some weird movies, to be fair.
So, it wouldn't even touch my top five.
You Moonrise Kingdom hater.
Piece of shit movie. Anyway, so I think that the biggest hype movie from this year was probably Argo, and I didn't like Argo as much as everyone else did. I think people like absolutely fucking were gung-ho about it, and I thought it was like an average suspense movie. My number one is Django, easily, no question. It's like one of the most easily rewatchable movies ever, even though it's a classic Quentin Tarantino movie where it makes you feel sort of uncomfortable with the language. It's so fucking funny, and it is so interesting with the dialogue scenes. Really cool with the action scenes. The screenwriting's phenomenal. Maybe a tad too long. And a lot of scenes definitely make you kind of like uneasy. But fucking incredible movie.
Okay, so the Moonrise Kingdom slander is ridiculous.
But true.
Trill, it's on my list. Didn't make the top, but it's got a 95. 96, number two for me was Zero Dark Thirty. Love that movie. Another Chris Pratt movie. Zero Dark Thirty. There was a 3-year in a row where Chris Pratt was in Moneyball, Zero Dark Thirty, and Her. That's a run.
That's right.
Yeah, he was the card guy. Yeah, the receptionist. I Ken Jack, you and I are just enemies now. I picked Argo. I love Argo. I gave it a 97. I thought Argo was amazing. Great suspense for a story that you knew how it ended.
See, I'm going to say something that'll upset you guys since you're both Moonrise people. I put both probably The Hobbit and Prometheus over Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah, Prometheus. How does that taste?
That's not real. Fake news.
The funny thing is the reason we thought about this segment is because people said that we've been agreeing too much, and we're disagreeing a lot, so you get your wish there.
Here's something that might make you more upset. I think that Moonrise Kingdom was essentially the Wes Anderson rendition of Cloud Atlas, which basically also came out that year.
Come on.
The true true.
And finally, let's close it out. Kenjack, we can make fun of you all we want, but Django Unchained, which was great. Love Django Unchained. It was the pick from our Twitter family. They said Django Unchained, 40% of them, followed by Silver Linings Playbook, Argo, and then Skyfall. 2013, Inside Llewyn Davis, Oscar Isaac, before he was in Star Wars. 12 Years a Slave, Her, Mud, Enough Said, American Hustle, Nebraska, Gravity, Dallas Buyers Club, Captain Phillips, Rush, Fruitvale Station, The Wolf of Wall Street. Trill, what'd you pick?
Oblivion.
2013, your best movie.
Can you guess?
We Are the Millers.
No. I bet Jeff knows. It's Dallas Buyers Club.
Oh, I was going to say, Inside Llewyn Davis or Dallas Buyers Club for you?
It's Dallas Buyers Club. I love that movie. McConaughey was great, and that was Leto's best performance. So, yeah, not much to say there. I loved it.
That was my struggle, was between that and 12 Years a Slave. I gave it to 12 Years a Slave, though. That movie had me, like, crying at points. It's so really extremely powerful and great use of non-soundtrack and, like, ambient sounds, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. where they're working stuff, and you just hear, like the crickets and the haze and shit, and it makes you feel really uncomfortable and makes you feel really sad and uplifted and then also downtrodden and everything. There's such a great movie. I can never pronounce the guy who was in it correctly. It's like, Jeff, you probably said it 1,000 times, so I'll give it to you.
Should
we
tell Edgefor?
I don't even know if that's right, but I'll take your word for it. But yeah, he was really great in it. And Fassbender.
Yeah.
Top two, probably Fassbender performance.
Well, again, won the Oscar. It was an important movie. It wasn't my pick. It was a 95, tied with Inside Llewyn Davis. Loved Inside Llewyn Davis. A movie that featured Oscar Isaac and Kylo Ren himself, Adam Driver, might I add. My top pick was Her. Gave it a 96. I absolutely loved Her. Again, it reminded me a lot of some of the subplot of Blade Runner 2049. I thought Her was inventive. It was creative. It was just a perfect sci-fi movie. And it wasn't the sci-fi movie in terms of like action. It was just science fiction. It was different. It was futuristic. And everything about Her, I loved. And it didn't get a lot of love in our vote here, unfortunately. It did get 8.4% of the vote. Fruitvale Station was up there. People like Dallas Buyers Club, Inside Llewyn Davis. Wolf of Wall Street won this shit in a landslide, 45%. Wolf of Wall Street wasn't even top 10 for me that year. I liked Wolf of Wall Street as a fun movie to watch. That movie was too long to a fault for me.
I took my grandma to see this movie.
Oh, no.
Oh, shit.
I didn't really like read the reviews all that well. And then we went to go see it as our like Christmas movie. And yeah, it wasn't good. She didn't say anything. She just didn't say anything, Ken Jack.
Nothing to Jonah Hill's dick.
No, just nothing there.
All right, 3 more years to go. Moving on, 2014. This year was a mess in terms of voting. Tons of picks here. They're all very close. Whiplash, Birdman, Guardians of the Galaxy, Boyhood, Gone Girl, The Lego Movie, Grand Budapest Hotel, Nightcrawler, Interstellar, Edge of Tomorrow, American Sniper, Winter Soldier, Imitation Game. 2014, Trill, what do you think the best movie was?
The Theory of Everything.
Wow, get out of here.
Yeah.
I didn't even put that one down. Whoa.
I love that movie.
Everything.
Yeah, Eddie Redmayne killed it. Stephen Hawking. Yeah, so not much there. I just thought it was just a great movie and an interesting story as well.
I had a three-way tie when I originally came into this with Guardians of the Galaxy, John Wick, and Interstellar. Those are my three for this year, and it was a really big struggle for me to break it, but it's definitely Guardians. It's like the most, for me, I think it's the single most rewatchable movie I think I've ever seen. Like, no matter what mood or what movie I'm in the mood to see, like action, horror, suspense, funny, it could be anything I'm in the mood to see, I will watch Guardians of the Galaxy if it comes on, no matter what. So that's my pick.
And you are a huge Chris Pratt fan.
Fucking love him. Please kiss me, asshole. Kiss me, Chris Pratt. Come on,
Guardians
the pod.
Of the Galaxy is one of those rare, like, non-Star Wars movies for me. And by non, I mean literally it wasn't Star Wars, where I have this insane amount of hype and excitement for. I was so amped for that movie, and it delivered. And nothing like a movie that delivers that you just have so much anticipation for.
Yeah, it exceeded every expectation I could have ever placed on it. So good.
I have a little hate on Theory of Everything because I think Michael Keaton should have won for Birdman that year and not Eddie Redmayne, even though he was incredible.
That's fair.
I picked Whiplash. I thought Whiplash was amazing.
Yeah, Miles Teller was great.
Whiplash, you're going to hate this, Ken Jack, gave it a 98. I thought that was an almost perfect movie. It was, not even Miles Teller. J.K. Simmons was so amazing. Every single time J.K. Simmons opened his mouth in Whiplash was amazing. Every time. The rushing and dragging scene is one of the best scenes in any movie, period, in the last 10 years. Is it because of Miles Teller, or is it because you just don't like Whiplash? Because you went off on Whiplash like a week ago.
I think this is an easy bias for me to understand. I don't like music movies. I don't identify with music like a lot of people do. I have nothing further to say on this. Giving it a 98, man, just want to like throw poop at you through the screen.
Well, I do feel vindicated, and I'll get to it in a second why. Birdman was second for me, 96. I thought Birdman, the cinematography and the way that movie was shot was one of the most unreal things I've ever seen on screen. Whether you understood or connected with Birdman or not, the whole one-shot thing, amazing. And that was the Gone Girl next, love Gone Girl, and then Lego Movie for me. But the listeners, they agree with me. Whiplash, 20% of the vote. Suck it, Ken Jack.
I hate you all.
After that, Interstellar, Guardians of the Galaxy, Birdman, and then Gone Girl. All right, we're nearing the end here. 2015, this one, I hope we all agree on this one. Spotlight won the Oscar. Mad Max Fury Road. Inside Out, The Martian, Steve Jobs, Straight Outta Compton, The Big Short, which was another great Gosling role, by the way. He was so good in The Big Short.
Yep.
Brooklyn, Creed, The Force Awakens, Ex Machina, The Revenant, Room, The Hateful Eight. That entire year was packed. And then it had the Entourage movie.
Oh, yeah.
To round it out.
Hey, baby.
Yeah.
Baby bro.
There are so many good movies in 2015. Trill, what'd you pick? Best movie 2015.
I feel like such a simpleton saying this, but for me, it was Mad Max. Spotlight was fantastic, but out of all those movies, I thought Mad Max was just phenomenal.
I think it was a battle for me between Mad Max and Sicario, probably, and Sicario easily takes it for me. I could watch Sicario at any point. That Sicario was such a good movie, and I feel like it really didn't get even, like, I don't know, like literally a fraction of the praise it deserved. Like, I don't know anybody else that's seen it. And I tell everybody, like, if you're going to watch a movie, like you really want a movie you're going to be enthralled with, watch Sicario. It is that fucking good. It is amazing. I think all the acting performances in there, again, I think we're exposing ourselves also as Brolin stands. Really good role.
Not to humble brag here, but I've met Josh Brolin a few times because of work. The coolest dude.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
I mean, if you ever want have it like verified that someone's a great person in terms of like an actor celebrity, Josh Brolin is the man. You know who directed Sicario?
Who?
Denis Villeneuve, the director of
Blade
Runner 2049.
That's right.
Sicario did not get enough love that year. Mine though is Mad Max. Mad Max for me. Here you go. You want a rating? I gave Mad Max a 99 out of 100.
Whoa. That's fair. All right.
Mad Max is unbelievable. It is rewatchable in every sense of the word for me. It's gripping. It's visually stunning. The best use of CGI maybe ever. The way they mix in practical effects and CGI. Oh my God. The whole thing is just Mad Max blew me away, and nothing made me happier than people going, huh? When the Oscars that kept winning awards left and right. I understand why Spotlight won, but Mad Max was the best movie there. And Mad Max just loses to The Departed for my favorite movie in the last 12 years since I've been ranking movies. Mad Max is the shit.
Yeah, I echo your Mad Max thoughts. It's hard putting an action movie like in with some of those other great movies, but it was just that good. It really was.
I think you guys might actually sway me the more I'm thinking about it, like which movie I could rewatch at any point. And it might actually be Mad Max. That was such a phenomenal tour de force of a movie. God damn. Now I want to rewatch it.
Like leaving that theater, I was just like, holy shit. Are you kidding me? Just unreal. Yeah. Our listeners, they picked Mad Max Fury Road as well. 26% picked Mad Max. Force Awakens got 16%. The Big Short, 12%. Ex Machina in there. Sicario in there. Spotlight. At 6%. All right, lastly, in terms of years that have been completed, 2016, Hell or High Water, La La Land. This was the closest vote, easily, by the way. Moonlight, Zootopia, Edge of 17, Manchester by the Sea, The Nice Guys, Hacksaw Ridge, Silence, Lion, Hidden Figures, Arrival, Deadpool, The Lobster, 10 Cloverfield Lane, Nocturnal Animals, Moana, Sing Street. So this was the closest vote, hands down. Let's see what we say. 2016, Trill, what do you think?
I have Arrival. I think that's an unpopular pick because I know a lot of people didn't like it or didn't think it was that great, but I thought it was captivating. And I'm more on the sci-fi side of things anyway, so I loved it.
The more I'm thinking about it, this was kind of a tough year because it was pretty top-heavy, probably. I think either Hell or High Water, Deadpool, or Moana. And I think Moana was
one of the best. That is quite the variation.
It's a weird, yeah, it's a pretty big variation in themes. More I'm thinking about it, probably Deadpool. That was like one of my favorite superhero movies I think I've ever seen.
It's not rewatchable at all. Have you gone back and rewatched it? It's so hard to get through again. I don't know.
I think I have rewatched it. I have not rewatched it, so I may have to do that test.
Yeah, I think Hell or High Water was probably the best movie of the year, but I think my personal pick was Deadpool because I was laughing throughout. Yet another T.J. Miller absolute zinger of a movie. Our good friend.
So I picked Hell or High Water, and I stuck up for this movie big time last year. I gave it a 96 out of 100, which is funny because there's no movie I've defended more in my life than La La Land. I gave La La Land a 95. I think we'll save La La Land for like the Oscars argument one day because I know, Ken, Jack, you have thoughts on that movie. But Hell or High Water, Jeff Bridges nailed it. Tension in that movie. When that movie hits its peak and kicks into the third act, one of the most tense third acts of any movie I've seen. All the roles are great. Chris Pine is great in that movie.
Ben Foster's underrated. He's like,
oh man, he is good.
310 to Yuma, he killed it. He should just be in Westerns the rest of his career.
Right? So 2016, our followers picked Hell or High Water, 18.9%. But it was close because after that, 14% The Nice Guys, 14% La La Land, Manchester by the Sea, which I thought was – what do we think about Manchester by the Sea before we wrap up 2016?
That's a good question. I think – I don't have it rated. I think I'd probably have it in like the – mid-80s.
It was just really sad. It just felt like one of those movies that like you're supposed to feel like it's good because it's really sad.
I mean, it's defined slice of life. It's just it's dour and depressing.
It's good, but it's just it's so sad. Like it's hard for me to I don't know. I don't really like sad movies all that much, so.
Yeah. Speaking of La La Land, you guys are already going to know how I feel about it because I don't like music movies.
La La Land is the opposite of Manchester by the Sea. It's so uplifting and happy, even though the end is a bit of a twist and you know, people are like, oh, they're not together. Spoiler alert. But it's an uplifting movie and it's happy. So it's really on two ends of the spectrum. So those are our lists. I'm not going to recap them. They'll be on Twitter because it's long lists. But how about a little quick 2017, guys? What's your top movie from 2017 so far? I'll start off quick. Dunkirk for me, followed by The Big Sick and then Blade Runner. And then Logan after
The Last
that.
Jedi.
How about you guys?
Last Jedi's up there. So I forget what I rated it. I think I may have rated the Big Sick higher than Dunkirk, but I've gone back and thought about it more, and I think Dunkirk's number one for me so far. It's Dunkirk, The Big Sick, then Get Out.
I think out of the movies that have actually come out this year, probably Logan, Blade Runner, Big Sick would be my top three.
But I think we're all pretty similar. It's funny. I think we're all much more similar this year, ironically, now that we have a podcast together, than we were in our past years. Because on some years we agree a lot, but some we are way off with each other.
Because it's an echo chamber on our podcast. We're like, I'm just like, I think this movie is good. And Ken Jack's like, yeah, I agree. I think that was good. And then I've just incepted you guys.
But Max Kellerman.
I hope you guys enjoyed that. It's a good debate. Huge thank you guys for not only following us on Twitter, at LightsCameraPod. If you're not already, please click follow. But voting on this poll. Hundreds of replies. And only one section had joke replies. So we appreciate that. We appreciate no one said smocking in their replies. That's an upset. Yeah,
they were nice and restrained for now.
Well behaved. Loved getting the answers. We're going to do a lot more interactive things like this where you guys vote and give your opinions. We love the engagement, love the interaction. So we released our schedule for the remaining podcasts. And if you don't have Twitter, we'll read them off. Remaining podcast for the year. Episode 8, we're going to review next week. Boo 2, A Madea Halloween, Geostorm, and Happy Death Day. Episode 9, Batman and Robin and Batman Forever, a bit of a throwback review. Next podcast, we'll do Thor Ragnarok, followed by Murder on the Orient Express and Daddy's Home 2. Then we'll do one about Justice League, then one about Coco, the Pixar movie. Might mix in one or two more in there as well. Episode 14, we'll do holiday movies. We'll talk about Christmas, Hanukkah movies. Episode 15, we're going to review The Room and then The Disaster Artist, the new movie coming out about The Room. Episode 16, that's the big one, The Last Jedi. Episode 17, Jumanji, the last one of 2017. And then the closeout movies for 2017. This will be the first week of January. We'll talk Pitch Perfect 3, Downsizing, and The Greatest Showman all in 1 week. We will talk about the Daniel Day-Lewis movie at some point. We got to just shoehorn it in somewhere. I think it's going to be limited release. Some people noted we didn't have it on the schedule. We got to give you guys time to see it. We're going to try to give you guys time to see a lot of these movies. For some, like Star Wars, we're going to do right away. Justice League, we're going to do right away. But some will give you guys some time to go see it, like we did with Blade Runner. Guys, closing thoughts? I thought this was a good podcast.
You're both dumb for liking Moonrise Kingdom, but other than that, great podcast.
Is that the one that you hated the most between us, Moonrise Kingdom?
I can't believe that even hit any of your like top five on the year. It makes me so mad. But we'll talk about it more if we ever get into like a one-on-one.
Come after me.
Thanks again. Follow us at Lights Camera Pod. Please subscribe to this podcast and give it a 5-star rating. We get a couple thousand listens on here every week, and we don't have a couple thousand reviews. So why don't you hit that 5-star review? Maybe we'll get a treat. Maybe a certain Young Sheldon review will leak out there. if we hit enough reviews on iTunes.
Doesn't exist, though.
For Trill Ballins and LCP Ken Jack, a.k.a. Ken Jack, he does have a real name. I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you next week.